Come on, single file over here. Come on, next one in line.
It would kill him to say ho, ho, ho.
You were just here.
I was not.
Yeah, you were. You were on my lap 5 minutes ago.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, you were. Now you're going on Santa's list and you're getting nothing.
Fuck you, Santa.
Hey, my friend, you don't talk that way to Santa.
Get back there. Tell Santa you're sorry.
What the hell's wrong with you, Bobby? Why don't you lighten up a little bit? It's Christmas.
It's Britney, bitch.
And did I rock everywhere like such a...
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Out, Charlie! Out!
Our next-door neighbors are foreign countries.
I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers.
Thank you.
Now watch this drive.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Remember Shuffle. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is my co-host, Giordano.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
And today, it's just the two of us. We will be discussing a handful, not even a handful, a Simpsons handful of Christmas movies from the 2000s decade, because tis the season. Giordano did an Uno Reverso on me. When I was talking about why we had to do Donnie Darko during spooky season, Giordano said, well, by your logic, we need to do a Christmas episode. So here we are.
I know you don't know very much about Ben and I, unfortunately, because we've been sort of anonymous, but Ben is more of a Halloween guy, whereas I'm more of a Christmas guy.
I'm not a Halloween guy. Don't put that on me.
Ben wears a trench coat. He has barbed wire tattoos. He wears biker boots and listens to Metallica and Pantera. Prancera. That's my favorite band. It's a Christmas cover band of Pantera.
Kind of like a Trans-Siberian Orchestra style Christmas metal band.
Yeah, whereas I'm more of a Buddy the Elf-like figure.
I want the record to show I am not the active school shooter-looking-ass motherfucker Giordano described.
So I insisted that we do a Christmas episode, because I really do love Christmas. It is my favorite time of year. I was about to tell Ben today that I'm just so sad because I'm flying back to Canada, the tropical land of Canada, for Christmas. Gonna do some surfing, gonna get a tan, gonna hit the beach, and I'm just sad because we're only a couple days away from Christmas, and I feel like it's slipped away. I've been so busy, I haven't been able to really savor the Christmas season. I've been sad.
Yeah, the meter on Santa's sleigh of Christmas cheer is dangerously low because of Giordano's focusing too much on work. Yeah, predictably, I am kind of a bit more of the sad bah humbug guy around the holidays. But I have recently started working a job where I work with and around young people. And I will say that the cheer is infectious when you are around younger teenagers and they're getting all stoked and they're bumping Mariah Carey and doing the stupid dances from TikTok. I tell you, my heart grew 3 sizes yesterday.
You have any favorite Christmas songs, Ben?
I do, yeah. I love the Charlie Brown Christmas, like jazz Christmas album, the Vince Guaraldi trio. There's an incredibly juvenile and shitty punk Christmas album called Oi to the World by the Vandals that I really like. I was listening to a lot of Christmas ska this morning.
Yeah, we get some comments about the ska drops in our episodes, and I can assure you that Ben is responsible for 100% of them.
I'm learning the trumpet, dude.
I've never been like, we need a ska drop here.
It's been a while since I've been able to organically work ska into the conversation. Talking kind of broadly about the Christmas movie. Christmas movies are graded on the curve. You're at home, you're surrounded with your family that you have mixed feelings about. You need something to watch, but there's only a handful of good ones. There's a canon of classics. You got your S tier, It's a Wonderful Life, Home Alone, Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, I mean, they're S tier just because that's just a normal movie, right? And so that's why it's S tier, because it's like a normal movie that's also set at Christmas.
Yes. But for a Christmas movie, you grade them the moniker of some of them aren't that great movies, but they're something to watch around the holidays that reinforce the seasonal cheer. And so this episode, we want to warn you, must also be graded on a curve. This right. will not be our best podcasting work. But hey, it's a Christmas episode.
Exactly. You need a Christmas movie to watch with your family or your partner or whoever, by yourself.
Oh, no. If you're one of the many, many people who will end their own lives this holiday season alone, statistically.
And the problem is that there's only a few good ones. And so you end up rewatching the same movies all the time. And you're like, oh, okay, let me watch something new and fresh. Mm-hmm. And so you end up needing to lower your standards lower than where they normally would be for a movie. Just because, it's a Christmas movie and I haven't seen it in a bit, right? So yep. That's how you end up watching something like Love Actually or...
Yeah, what's another like thoroughly mid Christmas movie?
Oh, I mean, I rewatched, I think it's called I'll Be Home for Christmas, the Jonathan Taylor Thomas movie last Christmas.
Badoof.
I got a hot tip for you actually out there. If you're a mm-hmm. family and you're looking to watch something Christmassy and, you know, you've burned through all of the obvious ones, the Christmas Vacations, the Die Hards, the Home Alone, the Home Alone 2s, all that, just open up Netflix or whatever and watch the Christmas episodes from your favorite TV shows.
Yep.
You can throw on Moroccan Christmas. You can throw on the Christmas Party episode of The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll give you that same hit of Christmas entertainment with your family.
Some great classic Simpsons episodes.
Yes.
Classic Simpsons Christmas episodes, like where Bart shoplifts.
You run through a couple of those. That's 66 minutes of good times with the family. You didn't have to say anything to each other.
Yes, true.
I also highly recommend Sopranos Season 3, Episode 10, To Save Us All from Satan's Power, in which Tony tries to find the true meaning of Christmas.
And I'd also add this. If you are an ironic shithead who's an ironic Reddit epic bacon man who's still doing the Die Hard as a Christmas movie bit, I would remind you that Lethal Weapon also takes place on Christmas. So you can run that joke back. Lethal Weapon, is it a Christmas movie?
Are you angry with people who say that Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
I'm not. It's just whatever. It's over. Who cares? I guess I'm not mad if you just put it in the category. I'm mad if you make a whole big stupid thing about it.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the consensus opinion. Yeah, it is fun to watch at Christmas because, again, there's a very limited number of Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe like 5 to 10 good ones. And unfortunately, if you're watching 5 a year, you've recently seen most of them.
You've exhausted the strategic reserve of Christmas movies.
Yeah. And so that's why you might end up watching fucking Fred Claus or like Four Christmases or something like that. It's Christmas with the Cranks.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're like, fuck, I need something.
Is that a documentary about the opioid epidemic?
Yeah, it's a documentary about Tim Allen's time in prison, actually.
I would say that there's this thirst in society, this hunger, because people are looking for their next fix of Christmas cheer. And I think that's why I feel like we get a new Christmas movie most years, but very few movies can be good enough to break into the canon. Because we have this contradiction where because films are graded on the Christmas curve, there's less of a reason to make them good. So there's less of an incentive to really try on a seasonal Christmas movie. And because there's less of an incentive, then they're not going to be as good. It's a vicious cycle. But people are jonesing, man. I remember when Elf came out and people were like, oh my God, this is it. This is the next one. This is in the canon.
Yeah, I mean, we finally got another good one. We had been waiting a long time to find something else to put it in the Christmas canon.
Yeah.
The Christmas canon sounds fun. Yeah. So let's set the table a little bit. We'll start. It's Christmas in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
You just got a Razor scooter under the tree. You're fighting every day. You're a veteran of the war on Christmas.
Been in the trenches.
Yeah. We'll have to do a maybe next year's Christmas episode. We'll just be on the war on Christmas. But it is a very funny idea. It's almost like a double straw man argument because on one hand, the original people are... I don't think there were that many voices saying, like, there is a war on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
What they were objecting to was the idea that when you walk into a store or when you're at work, you may have been advised, hey, maybe you should say happy holidays. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, this suggestion was at most a suggestion. But like, what these people were hearing was, there is a gun to your head. And if you say so much as even merry holidays, you will be sent to work the fields until you learn to say happy holidays. Like, it's the Cultural Revolution.
Also, like, how many of those people since then have just been totally disgraced? It's like, here's Bill O'Reilly, the sex pest who had a multi-billion dollar settlement when he left Fox News, complaining mm-hmm. about the war on Christmas.
Yeah, when you're jacking off on the telephone, make sure that you say Merry Christmas and not Happy Holidays to your intern.
But yeah, war on Christmas. This really just comes down to the fact that in America, the only metaphor they have is war. We've said this on this pod before. We had the war on drugs, the war on crime, and the war on terror. Mm-hmm. Three L's posted by America. Crime, drugs, mm-hmm. and terror are all doing great.
I guess when you live in a martial society, it's the only way you can conceptualize things.
Our only power of abstraction is through war.
I watched a PragerU video. It was really hard to find like a contemporary story on the war on Christmas, but I did watch a PragerU story on it, and they were arguing that, like, listen, this is a Christian nation, and we know that the Constitution explicitly says that there's a separation of church and state. However, it was set up to be a culturally Christian nation, and so you can't take that away from us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so funny, because the idea that there's any kind of existential threat to Christmas is hilarious. It is everything for like a solid month and a week.
I think what the right wing has trouble abstracting and saying is that there's been a little bait and switch where Christmas is now this entirely secular holiday that's built around consumerism. Even the Christmas music that they play on the radio now is much more just songs about winter than it mm-hmm. is about the birth of Christ. Of course, there are like a million religious Christmas songs, you know, "O Come All Ye Faithful," "Silent Night." That gets a lot less airtime than "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas," or "Sleigh Bells," or songs about generally winter, which is very, very funny and can lead when you have this like bifurcation of Christmas, where there's the religious Christmas and then there's like winter consumerism, and these two things are different and we're swapping one in for the other. And that's why the right wing think that it's under assault, but it's just being switched for this thing that's called Christmas, but they don't recognize as Christmas. It's funny when people confuse this. My least favorite Christmas song, and there's some terrible ones, "I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas," Dominic the Donkey, "Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer," fucking stinks. But my least favorite song of them all is the Ethiopian famine song, the "Feed the World, Do They Know It's Christmas Time," in which Bono, one of the most contemptible people on this earth, sings the line, "Well, there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time." Mm-hmm. Do they even know it's Christmas time at all? Yeah, I think the Ethiopian Orthodox Christians are well aware that it's Christmas. I think they're deeply aware, despite the lack of snow and reindeer and peppermint candy canes and the like.
My favorite Ethiopian Christian meme I've ever seen is the one of Ron Swanson, of someone saying like, yeah, our missionaries going over there to be like, do you even know it's Christmas? And Ron Swanson saying back, I know more than you. Yes. It's like him at the hardware store.
Yes. Dude, that's a real thing. There's a book that came out last year all about fascist Catholic Ethiopia's mission to convert the heathen in Ethiopia, people who were already Christian, an older Orthodox church.
Getting back to the war on Christmas.
Yes, sorry.
I just wanted to say that these people are so funny because they want it both ways. They want Christmas to be about Christ, so they're fighting against the secularization of Christmas,
mm-hmm.
but they also don't want there to be an existential fear about Christmas surviving as a holiday. But they don't realize that Christmas becoming a secular holiday is the number one thing that will keep it alive. That's the best thing for Christmas, is for it to become a secular holiday, to make that transition. Easter never really made that transition, and as a result, nobody gives a fuck about it, mm-hmm. right? You like forget when Easter is. You're like, what the fuck? I guess. What's happening?
He's moving around, skipping and jumping around.
It's a movable
around.
Feast, yes. But
Giordano, I think they would respond like, oh, really? The way to save Christmas is by letting it get secularized? This is like telling the cow they have the best evolutionary strategy.
Yes.
Become
that's
meat.
That's true. Yes, exactly. And in the Christian tradition, Easter is actually like the more important religious holiday. I remember asking a priest about this when I was a child. Which one's more important? Who's your guy? Who's your holiday?
Who you got? I'm a big Pentecost guy. It's a dark horse holiday.
And he said it's a Easter. And I was like, that's fucked up because it's not nearly as fun.
It's a much worse holiday.
It's about a guy getting tortured to death. Yeah. Meanwhile, you got Christmas. It's a guy. He's in the manger. You're getting gifts. There's a tree. There's a lot more fun. We should have incorporated a lot more from the pagans on Easter.
I mean, they tried with the bunny and the eggs and the chocolate, right?
It just wasn't enough. You know, it didn't have the clutch gene.
Yes, true. Chris is really is a five-tool player.
So that's the context. We're going into the 2000s, and we're going to run through some holiday classics.
Yes.
Some of the biggest Christmas movies of the 2000s, ones that made an imprint on our culture. Why don't we start with, what do you want to start with? Elf, Love Actually?
No, let's start with Love Actually, please.
Yeah, Love Actually, 2003, Richard Curtis.
Giordano, it's Christmas, and at Christmas, you tell the truth. And the truth is... Three different characters have some version of that preamble. At Christmas, you tell the truth, which is patently false. If there was a Google Ngram for like percentage of lying, it would spike right around the holidays. All that family time requires some untruths.
It's a time to bite your tongue.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's not really when you're supposed to tell the truth and destabilize things.
Yeah, it's the tongue biting season. But the truth is, I actually didn't dislike rewatching this movie as much as I thought I would.
I was going to say, that's the ultimate irony about this movie, is so many people can agree that it's bad, but it's not that difficult to watch.
And I think that's by virtue of its structure. So if you don't remember, if you haven't seen it in a while, Love Actually is a series of interrelated vignettes. There's, I don't know, maybe half a dozen to a dozen little short stories about couples, and they're all interrelated, even though they don't need to be. And they all center around love in one way, shape, or form. And the benefit of this system is that even though some of these stories fucking stink, you're never with them for that long. You can return to some of the fun ones, or some of the heartbreaking ones, some of the creepy ones. We're not going to go through all of them because that would be tedious. What if we just do some of our high highs and low lows from the vignettes of Love Actually?
Yeah, let's just go through some of the stories that maybe were most interesting. There's two cheating stories because Love Actually is complicated.
Yeah.
That's one of the central theses of this movie, is that love doesn't always appear in the same form. It has many forms, and it's messy, and it's complicated, and it's chaotic. And sometimes it results in people doing some shitty things, like the Alan Rickman storyline, which honestly, I thought I would hate it a lot more on the rewatch. I remember when I first watched this movie, I was like, oh, this fucking is hard to watch. But I thought it was actually like a lot of, at least there was like emotions. You know, that scene where the wife goes into the bedroom and cries because she got the Joni Mitchell CD when she knows that her husband bought a gold jewelry.
And she's seen him flirting with his assistant. And and she cries. Yeah, it's brutal. It's heartbreaking.
And if a movie can make you feel emotions, you know, at the very least, it's decent.
Yeah, what's your rule, Giordano? If it makes me cry, 4 stars out of 5 minimum.
Yeah. I didn't cry during this, though.
Yeah, neither did I. But
I did laugh out loud a couple times.
Yeah, that's something. But yeah, Alan Rickman plays a fucking Alan Rickman type. He's got the languid voice. Like all Brits, he's curmudgeonly. But in the first scene, he wingmans one of his employees, where he's like, you've been in love with this guy at the office this entire time, and you should make a move. And so you, the audience, are like, oh, look at that. You're all repressed about your emotions, but deep down, you're a big softy. And Alan Rickman gets pursued by his succubus fucking employee. He has this assistant who very unsubtly throws herself at him. At one point, literally dressed as a devil in a Halloween costume at the Christmas holiday party with devil horns and everything.
I think she's quite literally meant to be the devil. Yeah, because Rowan Atkinson is meant to be an angel.
A Christmas angel.
A Christmas angel.
Yes.
And so she's meant to be the devil. And he goes for it. I mean, unfortunately, this plot line is unresolved, like most things in this movie. So at the end, he picks her up from the airport, and it's not clear if he slept with his assistant, if the marriage is over. I think actually Richard Curtis was asked, and he said, oh, they just live unhappily forever. Yep.
That's the British way, man. Stiff upper lip, baby. You see, Jordana, we didn't convert from British to North American. That's actually a happy ending over there. is that they're putting a brave face on over their misery and they're powering through. That's like when the community saves George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life for Americans. Let's go to one of the dumber stories.
Let's go to the other cheating story.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so the one of the most famous scenes from the movie is there's a gentleman in this movie who is in love with his best friend's wife.
His best friend's girl.
She's my best friend's girl.
Yeah, even though he's never spoken to her before,
mm-hmm.
but hey, she's a 17-year-old Keira Knightley.
She's so that young? Rich,
yeah, I mean, that's how old the actress was.
Fuck.
I think the character is probably meant to be older. But yeah, so he never speaks to her, but he's in charge of taking pictures of the wedding. And he takes 300 photos of her mouth.
Yep, yep. Big serial killer energy.
And then he shows up at her house, and this is one of the Christmas meets. It's time to tell the truth.
Yep.
And he's got a bunch of signs that he shuffles through, and they say, like, you know, I'm in love with you.
Mm-hmm. To me, you're perfect, and I'm going to love you even when you're a gross skeleton that looks like this. He has a photo of a gross skeleton, and she laughs at his joke.
Actually, the director, Richard Curtis, his wife has said that that character with the signs apparently is the character in the movie that he is most like.
Interesting.
If you ever want a little window into the writer-director Richard Curtis.
Yeah, it's a bad story because, first off, this is a bad thing to do to your boys. This is a grotesque violation of the bro code. But less flippantly, this guy just didn't say anything for years and years and years, just stewed in his emotion and just love bombs this woman silently with signs while her husband's in the other room. I'm not the first to break this new ground here, but what would have happened if the fucking husband opened the door instead of her, and he's got all these cardboard signs and a fucking little boombox for Caroler so he can cover up his things? Don't worry about these signs, bruv.
Yeah, this storyline fucking sucks so much just because, you know what? You could probably have a good story about like a guy who has a manic episode and does this.
Yeah.
But the other characters need to treat him like someone who's having a nervous breakdown and not someone who's doing something cute. Keira Knightley's reaction to him doing this is to be like, oh, you.
And then she kisses him. What the fuck? Don't encourage this behavior.
She explicitly says to him, but you never speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
This movie very much believes in love at first sight. And so like nothing about this relationship is earned. Actually, there's another storyline where we have another storyline of people who don't speak to each other.
Yes, this is a perfect segue because it also starts with cheating where Colin Firth, in the opening Colin Firth story, we see him say to his girlfriend, did I mention that I love you? 3 times. It's like the scene in a buddy cop movie where the old grizzly cop says, I'm just one day from retirement. But in rom-com terms, because he keeps telling his girl that he loves her and she doesn't say it back. And you can see it coming from a billion miles away. And he gets cheated on. She sleeps with his own brother. To give you an idea of the kind of writing that you get in this film, Colin Firth's partner is in the bedroom. Colin Firth comes home early. He sees his own brother there and he hears his girl say, hurry up, big boy. I'm naked and I want you at least twice before Jamie gets home. A real way that a real human would talk. And so Colin Firth, now newly single, goes to France to some kind of writer's retreat where he has a Portuguese housekeeper for some reason and somehow manages this schlubby, nebbish, awkward writer falls in love with this Portuguese dime without ever exchanging a word.
And he also learns Portuguese in like a week, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty tight. They learn each other's language in a week. You know, they use tapes.
Yeah. I hate Colin Firth, actually, because of a Love Actually style story where I was madly in love with this woman a few years ago and her hall pass was Colin Firth. And she didn't sleep with Colin Firth, but she did leave me for a British guy who looked like him and now they're married. So.
Oh, sorry, bud, but that's
hilarious. Yeah, what are you gonna do?
That rocks. Fucking
stuttering bastard.
We gotta find one country where the Canadian accent is cute.
Yeah, so I mean, that one's just stupid again, because it's like, oh yeah, they're in love, but it's not unrealistic to imagine that two people who can't speak the same language could hook up or have sex, but they do get married.
Yes.
In this movie, without ever really speaking to each other, which does seem, I don't know, like,
are we in a fucking fairy tale? Not to mention the fact that Colin Firth buys her from her father.
Yes.
He goes to her big Portuguese family in the little Portugal district of France, apparently.
But yeah, Portugal is apparently still in like the 19th century.
Yes. He goes to the small village and asks her father for her hand. There's multiple jokes about selling this woman, because she also has they also have a bunch of jokes about her larger, uglier sister.
Yes, yes. Kind of like Stav's grandparents, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just move on, because we got a lot to get to here, but yeah. We got the Laura Linney story, which is so stupid.
This is the one she's got to... You want to hear something really embarrassing? In my mind, when I thought back to this movie, Laura Linney can't fall in love because she has a brother that she has to take care of. Mm-hmm. I thought the brother had Down syndrome when I thought back to this movie. But the brother has schizophrenia or something. Mm-hmm. It's implied. And the parents are no longer in the picture. And her whole plot line is that she wants to hook up with this guy in her office, but she can't because she has to take care of her brother.
One of the things that infuriated me about this movie is, like, this guy is like a literal like underwear model. And yes. She's about to hook up with him. And she stops because her brother calls her because he's having some kind of episode. But his brother is already in an institution.
Yes, correct.
He's already at the hot. Like, yeah, it's important that you get them to the institution if they're having an episode. But once they're there, they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
There are professionals in charge. And
yes.
You showing up is not going to save them.
Yeah.
So she actually has a problem herself where she's overprotective in a way. But nothing can happen to him once he's already at the institution.
Correct. It's a bad plot line.
You really don't want to be like a woman in this universe, I
no,
think.
No.
Because, yeah, you're not really allowed to fall in love. You're certainly not allowed to have a foursome with a bunch of underwear models, or even a onesome with an underwear model.
Oh, God. Yes, we'll get to that one in a second. Let's move on to what I think is my favorite plot line. Maybe not the one that got the most laughs out of me, which I think has to go to either Colin the Coxman or Billy the Rockstar. But my favorite plot line is Prime Minister Hugh Grant.
Yes. It's had the most to say about geopolitics and about the British character, I think.
Yes. So Hugh Grant plays Britain's first bachelor prime minister in a long time. Oh my God. There's a show I want to watch. Bachelor Prime Minister. Fuck it. Cast Boris Johnson for real. We know he's a pussy getting legend. And their plot line is about, again, I think, kind of a dime in the form of Natalie, his lower class receptionist who literally played the lead lady in Pygmalion, which is a story about teaching a lower class woman to talk right, that actress. So we have this upper class posh bachelor prime minister, his lower class assistant, Natalie, whom every single character calls chubby or thick or fat, including her boss, her immediate supervisor, her ex-boyfriend, her own father. And you should look this woman up. She is just a normal size human woman.
Yeah. This plot line was great because it had a lot to say about Americans and the war on terror.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Brits at this point were feeling a little bit of buyer's remorse when it came to the wars in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always so eager. They're like Poland. They're always so eager to help us out and be part of
the special relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And this is about a fantasy about a British prime minister standing up to the bully American president.
Yes.
From Texas.
It's about poor, plucky England standing up to the American bullies. Never mind that England is one of the top 10 largest economies in the world, and I think the second largest contributor to the war in Iraq. No, no, no. They're the plucky victim of the American bully.
Of George Bush the bully.
Of Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton, sort of an amalgam of George Bush and Bill Clinton. But yeah, he's a fucking cad. He's hitting on the assistant. He's bullying us into going into the war in Iraq.
To give you an idea, this movie, because it's one, a Christmas movie, and two, they need to keep it apolitical. This is the conversation that the Brits and Yanks have before Bachelor Prime Minister Hugh Grant stands up. And this is the first line. I'm not giving you no context. This is the first line of the scene. No, absolutely not. We cannot and will not consult on that either. Brit, that is unexpected. U.S. President Billy Bob Thornton. Well, it shouldn't be. The last administration made it perfectly clear. We're just being consistent with their policies. Brit, well, with all due respect, sir, they were bad policies. Prime Minister Hugh Grant, well, thanks, Alex. I don't think we're making any progress here. What policies? What are we talking about? Don't worry about it. We can't talk about it. Just the Americans are being mean to us. And then Bachelor Prime Minister Hugh Grant sees U.S. President Billy Bob Thornton groping slim, thick Natalie, and he says, that's my chubby assistant.
Yeah, he's really not that upset until someone touches, like, his property, you know?
If she's going to get me too'd, it will be by me.
Yeah, well, listen, the Brits are coming off a rough century, okay?
Yep.
They've taken a lot of L's. I've been watching The Crown recently, which I always thought would be stupid. Like, I would never be caught dead watching that. And I have been fucking loving it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is about precisely this topic. You know, The Sopranos opens with, I'm beginning to think I came in at the end of something.
Mm-hmm.
The best is over.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, that's, I mean, we talk about how that's like a theme in The Sopranos about America. But that is, like, Queen Elizabeth could have started The Crown with that sentence. I'm beginning to think I'm coming in at the end of something. The British monarchy. The best is over.
Okay, hold on. With all due respect, you have no fucking idea. I can't do that one. I want to do that monologue, but I can't do a high-pitched British accent good enough. No. It just comes out Irish.
No. Come on, finish it.
With all due respect, you have no fucking idea what it's like to be the boss. It's my QE2, mm-hmm. Tony Soprano.
And so there's a bit of that, right? Where he's saying, hey, listen, England, we're not what we used to be. We have a new role to play in the world, but we're a community. Britain's like a small town,
mm-hmm.
in which I'm with this towny girl. But yeah, it sort of portrays England as like this small community, right? And in fact, everybody knows each other at the end, you sort of figure out. And he tries to say, listen, we're not the greatest country in the world, but we're still a proud country of a lot of important figures. Shakespeare.
Milton. David Beckham's left foot. David Beckham's right foot. Yeah, when he gave that whole spiel, I wrote it down. Harry Potter, he lists. But imagine the spiel, but it's just all of Great Britain's historical crimes. So it's like, you can't bully Britain. This is the country of the Great Bengal Famine. The slave trade, the Irish potato famine, capitalism, the Bengal famine of 1940, and many, many more famines.
Yeah.
But yes, he ends up getting together with slim, thick Natalie and is very sweet. Let's talk about a couple of the jokiest plot lines. Do you want to do Colin?
My issue with Colin is it is describing a very real thing. If you're English, you probably could come to America and get laid. Do I think you could have a foursome with Alicia Cuthbert and like Denise Richards? No.
No.
But hey, could you probably bat a little bit out of your league and do well after like a Taylor? If you're in English, come over to America and follow Taylor Swift on tour and just go to the bars that are just outside the concert venue to catch all the people who are coming out of the concert. Maybe they're traveling from Topeka to Kansas City to see Taylor Swift, and you'll do very well. You could have a Colin-like story. But I just think he indulges himself, because I think Richard Curtis is like a guy who, unfortunately, he had a really, really good movie here, and he just indulged himself way too much.
There are too many storylines. I don't even want to talk about fucking Bilbo Baggins' stupid
story.
No, we
can't, because we got to get this over with.
Okay, so yes, I think Giordano kind of put a nice little bow on it. There is a fine movie in Love, Actually. It is just way too self-indulgent. We've hit on some of the good ones and some of the not so good ones.
Yeah, if you want to hear about all the storylines, I would recommend the Unspooled episode on Love Actually. It was 3 hours long. It's another podcast. They had a really funny story because they watched all the director's cut and everything, and they did find a funny story where apparently Alicia Cuthbert introduced herself to Hugh Grant on set one day, and it was the only day they were on set together, and so she was like wearing the outfit she had to wear to the bar, which was like very revealing, and she's like, oh my god, I had to meet you, but I'm so sorry. I'm like dressed like a hooker. And apparently Hugh Grant, charming as ever, said, my favorite.
That's awesome.
He's been funny in a lot of stuff, honestly.
One notable thing about Love Actually is that it is an R-rated movie with a lot of F-bombs because they're British. They can't help it. But also like multiple titties in this movie that you get to see. So there's something you can watch with your family at the Christmas time.
Yeah. Richard Curtis actually did explain that. He said that growing up, a lot of times movies would come out and he would
growing
just...
up, I was just so horny around Christmas time. I wanted to see titties. Sorry.
Yeah, he basically just said, growing up, I would only see some movies because I had heard that there were tits in it. And so I wanted to make a movie for all the boys out there who were in a similar headspace.
Bro, so that thing I said as a joke is the actual reason.
Yeah. Hey, Christmas time, it gets a lot of people very horny. You ever hear that song about I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus?
Baby, it's cold outside. That's a horny Christmas song.
It is, yeah. Billy the Rock Star. We didn't actually mention him.
Mm. Yeah. He's the best character in the whole movie. And in terms of what love can be, Billy the Rock Star is about loving your boy, man. It's mm-hmm. like your childhood friend. Yeah, Billy the Rock Star is this aging rock star who produces this hack fucking record. The movie takes place over the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, and we keep checking in with Billy, and he keeps saying more and more outrageous stuff on the radio, on TV, wherever he goes, and it just helps his case for this hack Christmas song from a washed up rock star. And it ends with him winning this big prize, but rather than go to a party at Elton John's house, he's gonna spend Christmas getting fucking pissed with his manager, his childhood friend,
watching pornography.
Yes.
Everything about that movie is communicated in the first couple minutes when Billy the Rock Star says that all he's doing with that song is repackaging something that already exists lazily and reselling it as a Christmas product, because that's what this movie is taking a bunch of tropes and mm-hmm. repackaging it as a Christmas movie and using that to sell some kind of product. Moving on to Elf. How about we talk about Elf next?
Yeah. Hold on. I'm a Hollywood producer, okay? Get me Will Ferrell. I want him to play a screaming guy. Make it Christmas. We got Elf. My mistake about Will Ferrell. I'm not going to deny. Will Ferrell's obviously talented. Fucking Anchorman. Generational. Like, it literally, the script is inscribed in the minds of a generation. Anchorman. Talladega Nights. Old school. Mm-hmm. He is like one of the biggest comic actors of the 2000s, for sure.
He is the biggest, I would even say.
My beef with Will Ferrell is that he kind of has a shtick once you realize the shtick, as many actors do. And the shtick is that he is the weird, screamy guy. That's what he does. He's a little bit out there, a little bit weird, and he screams. And that's a fine formula sometimes. But if you have like a bad script, you're going to end up with a movie like Kicking and Screaming. I don't know how much we're all thinking of that still.
That movie's fine.
I wish we had fewer of the kicking and screaming Will Ferrells, and I wish we had more playing it straight Will Ferrells, like in The Other Guys, which is maybe my favorite. It is one of my favorite comedy movies. Mm-hmm. And in that movie, he's not the screaming guy. Just a little bit. Just a dash. Just a sprinkle, you know? But when it's all the time, like in Elf, I find it gets a little annoying.
So you don't like Elf, eh? Or you don't like him in Elf? Because I love this movie. I think it's great. I think it has been elevated. Like I said, we don't get that many great Christmas movies. And I think Elf is in the S tier conversation.
Mm.
It's graded on a curve. You know, of course, so I'm Christmas giving it curve. A lot of points with the Christmas curve. But I think that Buddy the Elf is a really great character. I love his worldview. I think that his naivete and excitement and enthusiasm is extremely infectious and enviable, and he's well characterized.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Qui-Gon Jinn, he's like a really great character, and I think that a lot of people like to imagine themselves as Buddy sometimes. Just this guy who finds so much joy in the world and fun, that just the idea of getting a phone call from a friend is this amazing thing, or watching the lights on the elevator light up.
See, this is maybe just my melancholic disposition, but I wanted to see Buddy the Elf committed involuntarily, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest style. I find him profoundly irritating. And let me be clear. I like this movie. Christmas mm-hmm. Curve. I don't put it in the S tier. I put it in like the B tier. I'm not even going A tier. I'm going down to B for Elf.
Wow.
But it got a big laugh out of me when he reaches over James Caan's desk and answers the phone with Buddy the Elf. What's your favorite color?
Yes.
Laughed aloud at that for sure. But mm-hmm. it's just, I'm sorry. The schmaltz is too much for me. It's too much schmaltz.
It's a Christmas movie for children.
My favorite Christmas movie is It's a Wonderful Life, the one that centers around contemplating suicide.
I mean, I love this movie. Like I said, I just think that it's got a great cast.
100%.
Zooey Deschanel, she's the classic manic pixie dream girl, and he's almost a more manic version of a manic pixie dream girl. You know, he just sings.
Yeah, she's understated in comparison. Zooey Deschanel looks like a normal person in this movie.
I love that it plays with the existing Christmas canon, like those claymation movies. Those claymation figures actually make appearances in this movie. It's set in New York City, number one city in the world.
Number one city in the world.
Artie Lang plays the Gimbal Santa.
And what can I get you for Christmas?
Don't tell him what you want. He's a liar.
Let the kid talk.
You disgust me. How can you live with yourself? You sit on a throne of lies. You're a fake.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead?
Rip Torn plays the real Santa Claus, too. And it's made by Obama speechwriter Jon Favreau. Yeah, I mean, he's responsible for the MCU. Gave us Iron Man. It's also an ACAB movie. The villain at the end of the movie is the Central Park Rangers, who Santa has put on the naughty list every year since 1985. And the villain is also sort of capitalism in this movie, right?
Yes.
James Caan's character hates his life and is alienated at work from the pressures that are on him. It famously starts with him denying a bunch of books to orphans because of its impact on the bottom line. And he's spiritually empty because he's just like so focused on penny pinching at work.
Yes.
And he's been forced into being an instrument of capitalism. And in the end, I think he ends up publishing his own books or something like that.
Yeah, the happy ending is that he leaves his job and he starts his own publishing company so he can put out what he wants.
And Santa accuses him of forgetting about what's really important in life.
Well, yeah, he's also on the naughty list. It's sad at the beginning of the movie.
So I just think that it's, again, it's on the Christmas curve, but it has some great laughs, a great cast. I thought it was well paced. It has a pretty good arc. I love the music. It's got some great scatting. They play Pennies from Heaven.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, it's a classic fish out of water tale. It's a double fish out of water tale because Buddy the Elf is a human who's raised in the elf world. So that plays for laughs. And of course, Will Ferrell is a grotesque giant. So we have a whole bunch of laughs when he's in the elf world and he can't make toys and he's sitting in their tiny furniture or whatever. And you got all these super happy elves, super happy smiley elves, and of course his dad is the one grouchy elf, is the Ed Asner. And then he goes to New York City where he's this whimsical manic elf guy in fucking modern day capitalist New York, baby. And he has to like work in a mailroom. Even the child, James Caan's kid, his stepbrother, is more cynical than he is. And I mean, the moral of the story is that Santa is real and you should believe in him.
I just love how Buddy acts. I mean, he basically acts like he's on MDMA all the time. As far as Christmas movies goes, it's in the rotation for sure.
Yeah.
And anytime we can make a Christmas movie that gets in the rotation, I'm for it. So let's move on to maybe The Grinch.
There was something on TV. The original elves were ugly, traveled with Santa to throw bad kids a beating, and he gave the good ones toys.
The fucking Grinch. Maybe that's where they got the idea.
That fucking Dr. Seuss ripped it off.
That Grinch, man, that's where the money is. A couple of hundred mil, put Jim Carrey in the motherfucker.
I didn't watch it.
That's okay. I'll just riff a bit. I'm sure you'll remember.
I saw it in theaters as a 9-year-old or 10-year-old, whatever.
Yeah, so it comes out in 2000. I actually hadn't watched it since then as well. And I don't know why, because I quite enjoyed it, actually. It's made in 2000, so it actually avoids the pitfalls of a lot of what I thought it would suffer from, which was special effects being bad. It's all practical effects. Everything in this movie is a real thing. If he gets in like a garbage chute to go to the top of the mountain, that's a real ass garbage chute that is a solid object, and you can really tell. Jeffrey Tambor plays the villain in this movie.
Nice.
He's extremely good as the mayor of Whoville. I thought that Cheryl Hines was in this movie like three different times, but it was a different actress. Yeah, I just thought there was a lot to like. I mean, Jim Carrey is kind of like at the height of his powers in this movie. He's another guy like Will Ferrell where you can truly believe that there is no hesitation to the way that he's acting, you know, when he's being ridiculous.
Yeah, as Will Ferrell is to Shouty Screamy, Jim Carrey is to faces making, which is exactly what this role called for.
Yeah, and he really brings so much to this role in a way that an animator never could. The way that he moves his fingers and his body. Then there's a, you know what? There's a lot of jokes for the adults in this movie, which I never got as a kid. You actually find out one of the reasons why the Grinch hates Christmas is because as a child, he was forced to watch a swingers party on Christmas night while he waited outside in the cold.
We're lucky he just turned into a Grinch and not a fucking serial killer.
4 o'clock, wallow in self-pity. 4:30, stare into the abyss. 5:30, jazzercise. 6:30, dinner with me. I can't cancel that again. 7 o'clock, wrestle with my self-loathing. I'm booked.
Yeah, I think that's about it. But yeah, I gotta say, quite liked it. I loved seeing Martha May get bimbo-fied in this movie as well.
Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning that this almost spawned a Dr. Seuss cinematic universe. They thought, hey, let's crank out another one of these bad boys. And we had the Mike Myers Cat in the Hat, which I think was considered one of the worst films of all time when it came out. I think they realized there wasn't a lot of story meat on the bones of the rhyming children's books.
I want to see the Dr. Seuss remake of Once Upon a Time on Mulberry Street or whatever, the one that has the racist caricatures in it.
Yeah, oh, that's what Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire is gonna do. They're gonna acquire the rights to the 5 racist books that the Dr. Seuss estates dropped. They're gonna make those into children's adaptations. We're adapting just the racist ones.
I'm sure that at some point the Zoomer Tombstone podcast will do a Cat in the Hat episode. So, moving on, I did rewatch The Holiday. Half of this movie is just like a Hallmark movie. If you don't know the plot, there's a home exchange that a woman in LA and London do. Not London, but like rural England. And they learn about themselves being put in this new situation. And so there's a woman who's obsessed with her job and her career. And she needs to learn to slow down, disconnect, and fall in love with Jude Law.
Ooh.
So this woman from the English countryside, she moves to Hollywood and meets this elderly producer
who invites her into her home and is actually really nice to her and nothing bad happens to her. Jack Black plays a very good nice guy in this role. I thought it was actually probably his best dramatic role. He does play like a very classic nice guy, but like not in a contemptible way. So it was kind of nice.
I recently saw an Instagram reel where Jack Black was asked about this movie on a red carpet and he forgot being in it. He said, I was in a Nancy Myers movie.
Last question. This is sort of a holiday film. What would you say is your number one holiday film that you have to watch every year?
My favorite holiday film, you know what? It's got to be Elf. Because once again, Jon Favreau.
I appreciate the humility. You could have said your own movie.
Do I have a Christmas movie? Which one is mine? Oh, The Holiday. Obviously, The Holiday. Nancy Myers, genius.
It took him a second to realize. It clearly left a big imprint on him.
Isn't Cameron Diaz one of the ladies?
Cameron Diaz is the one who falls in love with Jude Law. She's the woman who is a career obsessed. She owns a movie trailer editing empire. So she does all the like in a world trailers to the point where like, she thinks of her own life as a trailer. She'll have these lucid moments where like, she can hear the announcer speaking to her.
Yeah, boy.
Okay, so some other mentions from the decade. We have 8 Crazy Nights, probably like the only Hanukkah movie that I can think of. We have, like I said, the Moroccan Christmas Party episode of The Office, the Office Christmas Party, which we referenced in our Office episode.
You must turn over to me all Christmas decorations and party paraphernalia immediately that will be returned to you on January 4th.
Okay, I think I can help here.
Okay, good.
As ranking number 2, I am starting a committee to determine the validity of the 2 committees, and I am the sole member. The committee will act on this now.
Okay, this is stupid.
Could you please keep it down? I'm in session. I've determined this committee is valid.
What? No. Wait. Permission to join the validity committee.
Permission to not.
Every family has their favorite Christmas movie that you watch every year, and which Christmas movie your family watches can say a lot about the type of family that you are. Let's say that your favorite movie is A Christmas Story. That's very interesting to me because I think that that movie specific, it's a nostalgic movie, right? So it's one of those movies that was filmed in like the 80s or 90s but takes place in the 50s. And so it's this attempt to look back and be nostalgic on a classical, innocent time, a traditional time.
I still haven't seen it.
No?
You're going to shoot your eye out movie.
I've seen it a few times. We were like a Christmas vacation family. I think it is just a great, great movie, start to finish. I love hearing my dad laugh at the same moment every year, you know?
pretty good time.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a generational divide. Like, you and I were raised by boomers, and so Christmas Vacation is the boomer Christmas movie. For millennials, your childhood Christmas movie is Home Alone.
Yeah, well, Home Alone's great. Home Alone 2 is great. That's another.
Yes.
Yeah, if your favorite movie is Miracle on 34th Street, you're a very traditional style family. You know, you are a Boston Brahmin family. Or you were extremely poor and you're watching whatever is publicly broadcast. If your family's favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard, you are epic, sir. And I demand to know what your father's gaming setup looks like. If your family's favorite Christmas movie is Love Actually, you got two different Christmases you have to go to. You're doing perfect. Christmas morning with hopefully your mom, and hopefully Christmas evening with your mom as well.
Yes.
If your family's favorite Christmas movie is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you were definitely raised by some extremely elderly boomers. Yes. These guys were like Joe Biden's age.
Yes.
Be they your grandparents or your own parents. Yeah, they were like, trust me, the CBS special Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is as good as it gets.
Have you heard that there's gold in them hills, Giordano?
The Heatmeister. I always like the Heatmeister.
Yes.
But if your favorite Christmas movie, by the way, is
The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then
I'm sorry you were raised by Hot Topic employees. Must have been tough.
Yeah. Your mom has recently dyed her hair.
Giordano, here's one for you. If your family's favorite Christmas movie is The Polar Express.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. If your family's favorite Christmas movie is The Polar Express, this is your parents attempting to impose tradition on you. They're the type of family that's trying to artificially create a tradition.
AstroTurf tradition.
Yes, exactly. They are people who, they're basically like in Canada, we would call them keeners. Like someone who's very like, what's the best American word for keener?
Oh, what, you know what the youth are saying now?
Mm-hmm.
I learned, we would also say brown nosing for kissing ass or sucking up. But now the kids are calling it glazing.
If your family's favorite Christmas movie is Elf, I would say that, yeah, you're like a new modern family. Maybe like you're an immigrant family, or yeah, you're someone who is recently American in some way, I would guess. The idea there is that, yeah, you're sort of like not bound to the baggage of the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer world. Because Elf is much better than those movies.
If your family's favorite Christmas movie was It's a Wonderful Life, then congratulations on coming from a family with perfect socialist politics. Jimmy Stewart, greatest American actor to ever live. I will accept no challenge.
If your family's favorite Christmas movie is a Charlie Brown Christmas, then your father is a carpenter and your mother is a school teacher. I'm just imagining like a very classic salt of the earth style family.
Wholesome. Or your parents are trying to secretly convert you.
To what?
To Christianity. There's like a shocking amount of God in the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Really?
They quote the Bible in it. We just remember the songs and Christmas time is here, but yeah, Linus reads the Bible to Charlie Brown and says like, this is the reason for the season.
Oh,
that's the one that the trads should hop on.
Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown. I can tell you what Christmas is all about. Lights, please.
The angel of the Lord came upon them. The glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, fear not. For behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, Jesus Christ the Lord.
I was wondering if there was like a religious, if your family watches one of those 50s epics about Jesus or something.
Yeah, like Ben-Hur, the Ten Commandments or whatever.
Yeah, the Ten Commandments or something like that. Then you're just a religious family.
Okay, should we wrap it up? I'll say one thing. As I've said on other episodes of this pod and on today's episode, my favorite Christmas movie is It's a Wonderful Life, not only for its socialist message, but also because the holidays are a very tough time for people. You know, it is the darkest time of the year. And I think the fact that people are bombarded with messages that you must be happy or else you're a Scrooge can be tough for people. And so one of the reasons that I like this movie is that it is about community, not even your nuclear family necessarily, but extended communal ties, which I think is something that we've lost. And it's important to get back to, which is part of why I like that movie.
Yeah, I guess if anything, it is nice that it's just like easier to talk to strangers around Christmas time because, you know, you can wish them happy holidays, Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And the vibes are good. Things are lit up.
I don't know. On the flip side, what is worse than being depressed and being told to be happy? All right. Well, as always, thank you for listening. Happy holidays from the Remember Shuffle crew.
And if we missed anything, we'll get it next Christmas.
Yeah. Next Christmas, we'll do a deep dive into the underwear bomber.
Yes. Oh, I forgot that we didn't bring up the underwear bomber.
No, we gotta save it for next Christmas. There are going to be more Christmases, Giordano.
Yeah. I thought he was the reason that we all have to take off our shoes.
He is, yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. He really had the biggest Christmas impact of anybody, if you think about it, you know?
The gift from that wise man wasn't particularly great.
He was flying to Detroit too. So we'll catch you later. Season's greetings.
Yeah, as always, like, subscribe, write us a comment. If you tweet us, we retweet. If you post on Instagram, we repost. Reel. Whatever.
Start a flame war in the comment section on YouTube. We love to see it.
Yes.
In our most recent episode, someone went off on our opinions on Star Wars, and honestly, it really does make our day. In the hierarchy of comments we love to see, it's like compliments, flame wars, insults, no comments. Yeah. So, really,
constructive
just say whatever
feedback
you want.
Maybe is up there somewhere. Yeah,
true. All right. Yeah, catch you later. Peace.
Ciao, ciao. Christmas Day.